please be advised.
Spoiler alert episode. Spoiler.
Please be advised. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Spoiler Ep 23.
Dun, dun, dun.
Interstellar.
The most requested Spoiler Ep.
Since The Dark Knight Rises, which was the first one we ever did.
Yeah, yeah. So we're really excited to talk about this movie, too. We all hated it. So
So just we got to say this at the top of every show. If anyone's coming across this for the very first time, we're going to go only talk about the movie Interstellar, and we're going to divulge everything, ending,
yes,
critical plot points. So if you don't want the movie spoiled, then stop listening.
Yeah.
Or pause it, go watch it, and then come back.
You get a lot of lawsuits. Is that why you have to do that?
A lot of people for refunds.
It's not legal. It's just somebody going, I had no idea.
Our lawyers asked us to say this.
But and we want to introduce our guest.
Ladies and gentlemen.
From the Road Stories Podcast.
Road Stories Podcast.
And a lovely home office.
Yeah, we're recording in Road Stories Valeriano Studios, Inc.
Corporate headquarters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, West Coast offices.
HQ.
Yep.
HQ.
Ladies and gentlemen, Murray Valeriano.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here. I love the spoiler alert episodes.
Good.
And this was one of those movies, too. Like, sometimes when we do spoiler alerts, we're like, out of three of us, generally there's someone who doesn't like the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But we all kind of loved it.
Well, yeah, we all loved it. But
hold on. Let me see it first.
No, then, you're doing this out of order.
No, I don't understand.
You're dumb.
You missed the wait, last eight emails.
Right. Wait, was it spoiler alert?
You suggested this to us.
Yeah.
Hold on.
The reason we have Murray on the show is because he has some very important inside information on this.
I might not.
Hold on. Well, let's. You were in rural Calgary. Your wife, Mary Zofries.
Outside of Calgary, yes.
Outside of Calgary. Tell who your wife is, what she did on the movie, and all that stuff.
My wife is a costume designer. Her name is Mary Zofries, and she was a costume designer on Interstellar.
And she also, we've talked about, but she's been Oscar nominated. Your wife,
yes,
is an amazing costume designer.
Yeah, she was nominated for True Grit.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she does a lot of Coen Brothers films.
All of them. Mm-hmm.
And she, is that how she got her start?
You're going to make me sound like a bad husband here.
When's your wedding anniversary?
Check out her IMDb page.
When's her birthday?
I swear to you, I am not lying. When for like the first 5 years, if it wasn't for IMDb, I would have not have known her birth date.
You better get an IMDb page for your wedding anniversary. Yeah. Then. Do you know your kid's birthday?
Which one? Yeah. Oh wait, I only have one. Hold on, I'm confused.
And then, is this her first time working with Christopher Nolan?
Yes.
Okay, so he requested her, obviously.
Yes.
So go through.
I feel like, you ever listen to classic rock radio stations where like, all right, coming up after the break, we've got Bruce Springsteen's keyboard player. You're like, eh. Oh.
No, but this is cool because,
because you went up there.
You went up there. So you were involved in the process. I mean,
went into space.
Yeah, you went into space. So tell us a little bit about that whole process of her getting the gig, going up there shooting, and what that whole thing was like.
It's like every other process. I mean, it was six weeks in a little town called Okotoks outside Calgary. We have a family. I have a son. So we switch off. I'll work, go on staff writing or hit the road heavily, and then Mary will stay home and vice versa, which is what we're doing now. And so during that time, it was her turn to work, and we had to go to Okotoks for 6 weeks.
Right.
So that's really the process. Did I answer your question? I kind of got lost. I kind of got lost there. Sorry about that.
I got in a wormhole.
They just, you know, they shot here, and a lot of times, I mean, nobody shoots movies, and you guys probably talked about this before. Nobody really shoots movies here in Los Angeles anymore.
They shoot part of it,
and a lot of it goes to Canada still, but now a lot of it's going to New Orleans because they're given such tax credits.
Mm-hmm.
But so we were up there with
Although that might change with Garcetti as the mayor. I think he's definitely film friendly.
Yeah, Garcetti. He definitely is film friendly and was friendly and was one thing he ran on, which got a lot of people excited. But there are a lot of productions up there. There's that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of TV shows are done up there.
A lot of TVs, that Western TV show that everybody loves is up there. I forget.
Common Wheels.
Common's in it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I flew up and down with Common a couple times going up there. And so there's a lot of productions going on, obviously, in Canada. And so they did 6 weeks up there.
CW shows are up there.
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, because I had heard that Nolan, planted a cornfield.
100 acres?
100 acres.
I think it was.
And burned. Did you get to see any of that up close, or were you...
That was out on the outskirts of the outskirts. I didn't just get to see them burn it down, and I'm not sure if they actually... I think they actually did burn it down, because mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I read there was very little CG in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot of practical effects.
All the spaceships were practically built. Yeah. That was really cool.
And a lot of models.
It showed. Mm-hmm. It showed to me.
And my wife told me every, far away shot of the characters were the actual actors, no stand-ins.
Really?
They weren't CG'd. No, wow. he likes it that real and that. So I was amazed there was very little CG, because it's a spectacularly shot movie.
Yes, it really is. I mean, some of the stuff you're like, all right, well, there's got to be a little bit in there.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, the black hole, I think you're going to have to see. I don't know that you can practically create
one outside Calgary.
But it's
a tax credit.
Yeah, this goes all the way to this is why he's such an amazing filmmaker. It was a vision from start to finish. It was mm-hmm. not only what he wanted to show, but how he wanted mm-hmm. to show it. Everything mm-hmm. from mostly practical effects to landscapes that he could actually shoot on, and all the way to I want to exhibit this on 35mm film and also on IMAX. Mm-hmm. And it was just, we need more filmmakers like Christopher Nolan, where they just have a vision from start to finish. They make a really cool giant movie that's not a comic book, it's not part of a franchise, mm-hmm. it's a film. It's why we go to movies. This movie, this was our 2001.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
It was a pleasure to watch from start to finish. I mean, people are saying, well, it might have been a little long. Okay, maybe, you could have trimmed a little bit of it off it, but I don't care. I mean, it was really, it
you
was
could
so
say
great.
That about 2001.
Yeah, you could definitely say that about 2001.
Every movie out.
Yeah.
You can trim, I give me a movie, I'll trim 15 minutes.
Sure.
Any movie.
Yeah, but the thing about Christopher Nolan and his film is, he's real, he's more cognizant of it. He looks, well, where can I trim, or how can I make it a little mm-hmm. tighter? And you see, this is where he really wanted it to be. And, as big a fan as I am of Peter Jackson, there's a lot that can come out of his film.
He says, how can I make it longer?
Yeah.
And then, because also partly it's driven by the fans, too, because they want the extended cuts and all that stuff on mm-hmm. DVDs. But I thought this film... was great from start to finish, everything from the story to the performances to the casting, even just the set pieces, the way, there was real deal. You could see that wasn't CG dust, in the cornfields.
Well, that was great too, the way he created it, because obviously we're in this future world where
this giant dust bowl, basically.
Giant dust bowls. They talk about corn is the only crop left.
Right.
Yeah.
The planet is dying.
Yeah.
So there's just dust everywhere, and dust is just a part of life.
Huge dust storms are prevalent.
Everything is your house, no matter how sealed up your house is, it doesn't matter.
Everybody has.
Lung
goggles, gas, lung stuff, masks.
Yeah,
you just have that everywhere. That's just a part of life.
It was great to see a movie set in the future that didn't look like the Jetsons. Didn't have jetpacks and everybody in a silver suit.
Mm-hmm. And it was also a post-apocalyptic movie, basically, because a lot of the mm-hmm. population had been decimated, that didn't have aliens, zombies, plague. It was literally an environmental apocalypse.
It was environmental apocalypse, and it's kind of this is where we could head.
Yeah.
Unless you think that global warming is a liberal conspiracy, you're one of the 3% of the scientists on the face of the earth, so you're a moron. You're on the earth.
Or you're
flat.
On a bankroll. Somebody's bankroll.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. If you legitimately believe that, you're dumb. You're dumb.
Yeah.
Dumb and crazy, and you think the earth is flat, and you bark at the moon, and you're stupid.
And it's 6,000 years old.
Yeah.
And there's no dinosaurs.
Yeah. Exactly.
But in this one, I believe they poison the soil. Is that, if I remember correctly, they poisoned the soil, which is cause which made no vegetation grow.
Yeah, there was these loose references to
What happened.
To what happened. Yeah. You felt like there might have been some kind of war, and there definitely was like, I got the feeling that as the climate change made it harder to affect, then there were wars or fights as a result
over
of
resources.
That. Over resources. And I found that really interesting. I want to go into
more lefty preaching. Tree hugger.
Yeah, I know. I'm so dumb. It's not like a human race needs breathable air or drinkable water to survive. What are you, a pussy?
You'll get that on your plane.
Yeah. On my private jet. But by the time I'm wealthy enough, I'm going to have a private jet that runs on, you know,
Unicorn whispers,
other things from my act.
Yeah.
And hugs. But like, to me, and we talked about this on the regular episode, but like, it was a film where as I'm watching, it's usually, especially, you know, having done this podcast now, we've done 260 some episodes. So I know you do this. I'm watching a movie thinking, well, how am I going to talk about this? Uh-huh. Like, oh, okay, I want to say this. I'm going to say that. I'm watching Interstellar going, I'm just blown away by this on so many levels. And the scenes that were long, like all of the stuff in space, but I was just mesmerized by it. I was mesmerized, too, by the time...
Theory of relativity.
Time theory of relativity quandary that they had to go. They're like, every hour is 7 years.
Yeah.
And then when...
And they go back to the mothership and the guy's older.
The guy's 23 years so cool. older. Like, why didn't you sleep? I wasn't sure. I thought you guys were coming back. What's her name? Anne Hathaway, you know, fucks up on that planet. And Matthew McConaughey's like, you just cost us so much fucking time.
23 years.
You know, like, and all that crazy shit, which was, to me, then the ending, which is this... One of those,
it's like Space Baby in 2001. It's metaphysical. Mm-hmm. It's based in hard science fiction. It's a lot of theoretical stuff, but it gets into all this
and the
great
spirituality
stuff. And the spirituality
and
exactly.
showing that that you know it's just a thing, especially in America, that science and God can't coexist. It's the problem of organized religion,
right?
Because then it forces people to go, well, I'm an atheist,
and science is supernatural.
Yeah,
like at the beginning, we hear, oh, it's a poltergeist, and really, it gets into time and space and how gravity is not, you know, can go through time and space. It's really interesting.
Well, in the very ending, where that depiction of the multidimensional world,
right. Mm-hmm.
Because that's the
thing.
Inside
the black hole.
Inside the black hole. So it's multidimensional, where he can see that bookshelf. He can see through that bookshelf all throughout time.
Right.
And that sort of theory of, what is it, the string theory of time, how it's
all connected.
It's all connected. Mm-hmm. It's not like there's two theories that I've heard. I'm sure there's more, but there's the river theory and then the string theory. And the string theory, it's all connected. So it seemed like that's what they were doing, where he's in there and... he's talking to his daughter at various different points in her life, which is just, I love that quandary.
Yeah.
And these highly intelligent beings that live in a five-dimensional world or whatever, that they're...
Don't exist.
They don't... What do you mean?
Well, that was one of the things in the film. There was no five beings that lived in a five-dimensional world. It was humanity... highly evolved. It was putting all that stuff back in. And that's what I love too. There was like all these like sci-fi tropes that got turned on their ear. Like, okay, there's an alien race trying to save us. No, there isn't. Mm-hmm. Now it's
The human race is so highly evolved that it can go back and see everything in
and
time.
Put the black hole there and put the wormhole there. And actually, so... We could, you know, and it creates all these cool science fiction paradoxes and stuff. I'm sure you could go and poke holes in some of the, you know, some of the plot if you really wanted to. But ultimately, this is the kind of movie that you just kind of got to let it wash over you, where it's a, here are the theories. Here's one possible way that these theories could happen with time, space, gravity, everything.
Right.
And this is what we're presenting to you. You know, take it or leave it.
Well, who's the douchebag who's like, sorry, actually a wormhole is me. It's a fucking movie.
Oh, somebody's on the internet doing that right now in that voice.
I know. Who is that douchebag? I'm asking you. I want his name. Don't ruin the fucking ride for the rest of us, man. Well, now, I'm not a sci-fi guy. Mm-hmm. I don't really. Oh, it's weird. The first movie I ever saw was Star Wars. It's my favorite movie of all time. But I never got into the sci-fi. But it mm-hmm. did for people like me. It explained the theory of the wormhole and how the time worked by, so I was able to stay on board and not, right. you know, and this is really my first movie regarding wormholes.
It explores some really cool themes too, like is love a quantifiable mm-hmm. force in the universe? Mm-hmm. Like, and the whole dilemma of do we go to this one who we know is alive and is transmitting data, or do we go to this planet where it's someone who you... are in love with. Mm-hmm. And it's not clouding my judgment, but that whole speech that Anne Hathaway said about like, yeah, this is my decision because I think love is something important. And also it's a force just like gravity and time and all of those things. And that's why I think we should go to this planet. And that's when Matthew McConaughey said, no, I don't think so. We're going to go to Matt Damon's planet and have him lie to us.
Yeah, and he was wrong.
Yeah, he was wrong. Exactly.
And the thing, that's what I loved about it, because it did bring these two, you know, camps that don't need to be separate. Science
right.
and spirituality don't mm-hmm. need to be separate.
No, they don't.
And she said it like it is a thing that is there, and it is a chemical thing. You know, it happens with there's the chemical in the human body, oxytocin. And when men or women have an orgasm, and when women breastfeed, it makes you want to love. You know, when a woman breastfeeds, it makes her a chemical reaction happens in her body that tells her to love. So love is a scientific thing,
right?
Which is kind of what Anne Hathaway was saying. And I thought that was so, it was so interesting. And the way they had that discussion and even debate, there's three people.
That doesn't work in men though, right?
No.
The orgasm.
No, we have it. No, here, no, and honestly, but testosterone counteracts it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so if you don't have a lot of testosterone, you're falling in love all the time like a big pussy.
And you say like William Shatner?
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man. But like, I love that discussion. They're on the spaceship. They have the hard realities of... We only have this much time.
Right.
We have to make
and
a choice.
Fuel, too. And fuel is another resource.
Yeah. Fuel's a thing.
It was like one of those resource video games. It's like,
right.
We have a limited amount of each of these things. You know, which do we grow? Which crop?
Let's get into this, the actual ending. So he gets back. He meets his daughter, who's now in her 80s or 90s or something like that. He's on this cool space station.
Yes.
That's
which he thought is named after him.
But she thought it was his great. He thought it was named, and they laugh. And he's like, "It's named after your daughter." But the great thing was because he could have gone. Well, I gave her the goddamn information. I was in the goddamn five dimensional library.
All she did was copy it down.
That's what the old man gave it to her. Let's call it what it is. You know, but that was such a cool thing.
And then, you know what? What's great too about us talking about all this right now too is this is. Our interpretations of this movie, of the theories that were presented. Like, somebody else could have a completely different interpretation of what... And it's all valid, because that's the way the movie is presented and set up.
And that, to me, is what makes a great movie, is you can have these discussions.
Yes.
You know, it's not like the movie The Judge, that Murray just saw, that I saw, that is a bag of shit, that the only discussion or debate is, why did you make this and waste all of our time? Mm-hmm. But, like... So the ending. So did any of you guys have a problem with the fact that he finally gets to see his daughter and she's like, it's so great to see you, but you know, I'm going to die. You need to get the fuck out of the waiting room while I say goodbye to my kids. Like, go off.
I went back and forth on that, especially as a father. Like, I thought it was really neat and cool and interesting to see, because, you know, you're expecting, oh my God, he's back, and hugs and cries, and she's like, well, I've lived my life without you.
I bought it.
You know, I made peace with saying goodbye to you before. Now I have to say goodbye to the people that I've spent the last 70 years with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did.
I thought that was really cool.
I bought it as a very human moment, too, because people in real life don't always act like you would expect them to. Like when you have, you know, he just came back from this, you know, crazy mission. It's been years and years later, and you know she is dying. Would she want her there? Wouldn't he? You know, your first instinct is, oh, it's a big giant tearful reunion. But then when you see the actual reaction and how it plays out, it doesn't play out as like, oh, that's a twist ending, or like, no, this is how someone might react in this situation.
Yeah.
And the beauty.
And she's a scientist.
And she's a scientist. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
so
she
she's cold hearted.
Yeah. She's a godless, hateful.
You don't get to love that Jesus Christ puts in your heart.
Yeah.
No. Son of a preacher, Murray Valeriano, ladies and gentlemen.
It's one or the other. You're, you know, you're with God or the monkeys. Which is it?
Yeah, choose.
Yeah.
And this is the monkeys TV show, right?
Yeah, heaven or the monolith.
No, the monkey. Yeah, yeah. You're with the band, the monkeys.
Yeah.
There were great musicians that auditioned.
You're with God or Peter Tork. Make your choice. Burn in hell.
Here we come.
So I thought, yeah, it definitely resonated with me. I thought it was really interesting. The thing I love, too, is about every detail of the science was thought out and planned. Like, even when you see the space station, the way, like, literally houses and fields were all built around the sides, and because that's the way to keep gravity.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. I've seen that drawing or mock-up of what a space station would look like. I've seen that version several times, and I was like, wow, that as a kid, I remember going, that looks awesome.
Yeah.
You're on this big Ferris wheel, and there's gravity or whatever.
It's like anybody, but you never feel it turn.
Yeah.
You
know? And I thought that was cool, and just, again, from a filmmaker standpoint, it was so, each world they were in, when they're on the, whatever, the ice, the Hoth planet or whatever.
Yeah, Hoth planet, and you know, the Dagobah or whatever. the water planet.
Yeah.
Dagobah was a system.
Yeah.
He, like Christopher Nolan, then when he's on the space station, it's so clean and crisp because there's no dust now.
Right.
And even Matthew McConaughey comments on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was cool. And then, you know, the going back to get Anne Hathaway, I was like, well, that's kind of amazing to me. Because you're right. Anyone he ever knew or loved is dead.
Right.
Yeah.
They're gone. The only person he knew is this woman that he's actually spent all this time with, that he bonded with in outer space. And who else is going to understand him? I mean, so much of it, when I think about it, it does make the daughter going, you know, I love you. You got to go live your life now. I got to say goodbye to these people that I've spent my life with. Mm-hmm. You got to go have yours because you're still a 38-year-old man or whatever.
Time traveler,
mm-hmm. which is awesome. And I want to get in now to, we all saw it at the Chinese theater.
No, I didn't.
You didn't?
Mm-mm.
I
still saw it at 35 millimeter, but could not get down to Chinese theater.
I saw it the 70 millimeter IMAX at the Chinese theater. And about a year ago, they remodeled the Chinese theater. This is my first time inside the Chinese theater since they remodeled it. The Chinese theater is one of my favorite theaters ever.
Mine too, now that I think about it.
Since they
remodeled it, yeah.
Because you were at the screening.
Was that the premiere?
The premiere.
Yeah.
So to bring anybody up to speed, the Chinese theater obviously was built in like 1926, 27, something like that. It's got all the handprints of the movie stars out front. And inside, I've always loved that theater. It's my favorite theater because it is a cathedral to cinema. It is ornate and beautiful, and it has a giant screen. And so
it hasn't been Disney-fied.
It hasn't been Disney-fied.
It's kept its decor.
Oh, they've kept it so great. So when they were remodeling, because some of my most amazing film experiences have been in that theater. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing Saving Private Ryan opening weekend and seeing guys in their 70s and 80s crying in the theater, like World War II vets.
Now that movie, I did see The Man, same thing. Yeah.
It's amazing. I saw the first Batman Begins there, and I went in there so skeptical. And I remember Scott Aukerman was there, and we were like, all right, let's hope this isn't stupid. And afterwards, I remember after that movie, I was like, holy shit. I was like, great. And the end of the movie where Commissioner Gordon goes, I hope we haven't started some weird thing. We found this card, and he turns it over and it says the Joker, and people, this guy on the other side of the theater goes, yeah. And it was like, it was palpable. And that I've had so many, I saw Spider-Man there. Mm-hmm.
I saw AI there.
It's
and then at the end, everyone booed.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've had...
We're talking about good moments in this theater, Chris. Can you
but
please?
But it's one of those theaters where certain movies I go, I got to see that at the Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So because of whatever, traveling, and I was really reluctant, like, God, they remodeled, man. What are they going to do? They made it amazing.
Oh, cool.
They cleaned up the ornate stuff. They literally polished it, kept all that stuff. And then in the lobby, they do cool stuff like Marilyn Monroe's dress from some famous film all that stuff. So you feel like you're in this like museum cathedral to cinema. They dug it out so it's now stadium seating.
Which is what a great idea.
And they put in, I mean, they used to seat something crazy, like 2,500 people. And I'm sure they lost 600 or 700 seats, a big deal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Really big, comfortable seats. And fucking amazing to me. And this visually, this film, like I heard it was like, took, you know, 600 hours or something to
edit?
No, not render the scene where he goes through the, I forget the time.
Yeah. Jeez.
It was like, somebody told me like the amount of time to render that was like insane. It was like a crazy amount of time. Don't quote me on 600 hours, but it was like a crazy amount of time.
I bet you about a 5-minute render.
Yeah. So it was visually, it was amazing. And it was so cool because I've had so many, I saw that when they re-released The Godfather, I saw it in that theater. So to me, emotionally, that theater means so much to me. It is everything that's great about cinema. I remember when I first moved to LA going, oh, this is the capital of all of it.
That one in the Dome.
The Dome.
And the Egyptian are like the three pinnacles.
I remember when they re-released Apocalypse Now, I saw it at the Cinerama Dome.
Yeah. I saw that too. Yeah.
And the helicopters flew over your head because of the sound.
Very cool. Yep.
Yes.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes.
At the Dome. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, the Dome is amazing also.
So I want to ask you, because Murray, you were there at the premiere.
Uh-huh.
So first of all, and we'll get into the sound thing.
Okay.
But tell what's it like going to a Hollywood premiere of a fucking A-list movie like that. What is that experience like? So there was red carpet.
There was red carpet. We actually got there late. We missed the red carpet. It's kind of weird, and I was hesitant on doing this episode because when you go to a premiere, and you guys have had premieres for your films and your shorts, everybody there is in your camp.
Right.
Everybody there, this is the best work you've done. Right. We're so excited to see it, from the caterer on up to the director. So leaving a premiere after seeing a movie, you generally are in a good mood and you like it, and everybody. And then, so you're definitely biased, or if not forcibly biased afterwards, because you're like, I don't know if I would I see this movie normally.
Well, I'll give a great,
you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. I'll give you an example. You go to a screening of a movie that sucked. I think I saw, 3,000 Miles to Graceland in that theater. And it was a bag of shit. That movie's a bag of shit. But everyone's sitting in the center. You could tell all worked on it. So when the credits roll, there's all these people going, woo!
Yeah.
And then there's this ring of silence around them, everybody going, no, it wasn't.
Well, maybe they just like credits.
No, that's true. So screenings or premieres, and also like seeing at festivals, there's a like you say, everyone's on board. So
yeah, so like not everybody in the credits is there, but every department head is probably there. Right. So they're going to cheer for their department. Everybody knows everybody. So it's hard to... I want to say I saw Toys at a premiere and loved it, and then saw it again, and I was like, this is a piece of shit. Right. It wasn't Toys, but it was one of those.
Yeah.
So it's very... I wanted to think about that before I came on and did this. So I did like it. But going to a premiere as a non-star is kind of... I mean, it's cool to watch, but you can literally, like, when we have done the red carpet and we've walked down the red carpet and we've had a driver, you can literally hear the cameraman going, oh. oh, Matthew McConaughey. So it's really not as like...
But it's kind of cool though, because I've walked down one of those things a couple of times. Mm-hmm. But to see the actual spectacle of the paparazzi and the A-list stars wearing $3,000 worth of clothing
and
all that stuff. Like, what is it seeing the like Hollywood promo machine in full swing.
It's really cool. It's really interesting to see. And we missed this one. Like I said, we got there late. We missed this one. But we've been, my wife's walked a few carpets and she takes me with her and it's great. And, you know, it's really cool to see all the handlers, you know, just be like, you're next. You have 30 seconds, you know, you know, this way. Or they're like, have a sign. This is so-and-so. He was the blah, blah, you know, he was third man on the ship. Talk to, you know, and just directing everybody through and all that. So that's pretty cool to see. And it's always great to see, you know, the world's best looking people dressed up in the world's most expensive clothes too, you know? So it's always cool to see. And it's just a great vibe. And, you know, you get to talk to people and you get to, sometimes you get to meet people that, you know, that you look up to and respect in the business or just a fan of, you know? So those are really cool. And it, let me tell you, I was saying about how everybody's cheering and everything. As soon as that movie starts, there's not a cell phone.
Yeah.
There's not a peep. There's not a I mean, it's like seeing at the Writers Guild Theater
now,
or something.
That's a big theater. Is it packed? Like, so there's enough people like to bring guests and stuff. Like every seat is taken.
No, every seat is taken. Every seat is taken in that thing. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. We had decent seats. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's really not a bad seat in that house now I think about it.
No.
So then what was it when you came out of the film, when you came out of that particular premiere screening?
In what way? What do you mean?
Well, like you said, you didn't just go see it at the mall. Like you said initially, you know, you had some reservations in the sense that it's such a biased audience.
Yeah.
So did you come out thinking, man, that was awesome, or am I being swayed? Like,
you know what my biggest problem was, and I know we want to talk about sound later, was that I couldn't get past the sound.
Okay, let's get into that.
I thought it was just me, and I talked to my wife about it afterwards, and like I missed a lot of dialogue because of the mix. And,
oh, I gotta agree with that too. Yeah, it was a weird mix in places.
And at first, I thought it was the sound system because I hadn't been back to that theater in a long time, and I'm like, oh, did they fuck up the sound system, or did they not? You know, because sometimes you'll go to a stand-up show or a concert, and if you're in front.
Right.
Of the speakers, you have a really shitty sound. Like at the Hollywood Bowl, if you're not sitting directly in front of the stage, the sound blows.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, did they fuck that up? And then Mary agreed with me. Then I started reading other articles about, no, it was mixed too hot. Hans Zimmer's score was...
You missed some dialogue,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you missed
some dialogue. Overlap, something's too loud.
And I missed some important dialogue. So I was like, wait, why are they going back to that thing? So I was a little lost coming out of that one just because of that sound mix.
Ah.
Was my initial, you know, and then of course you're whispering it because the mixer's sitting right next to you.
Right.
You wonder too, like it in the booth that the sound mixer did his mix, did that sound different than in the theater too?
What was Nolan's response to it?
You know, I sent it to my wife and I didn't read it. I didn't get a chance to read it, but you can just Google Nolan's response to sound in Interstellar and that article will come up. But he also, wasn't there problems with the Dark Knight Rises too? Didn't people get on him
about
that?
Well, there were some people, when the trailer came out for Dark Knight Rises, there were some people saying we can't understand Bane.
Mm-hmm.
I took that as that was deliberate.
Right.
I was like, Bane is supposed to be kind of creepy and confusing and cryptic and just sort of take control, you know, like that's what I thought it was. And then some people were like, so I don't know. I mean, to me, again,
well, they think about, people don't realize too, sound mix, it's also an art form.
Yeah.
You know, it's not an exact science. Like,
especially
are you saying it's subjective or?
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. No, it is. I think it is because, especially on a film like this, that is so, you're creating. First, the sounds of space travel and black holes and all the stuff we don't know.
Yeah.
And you're mixing in this intense score to create this, like, it's so encompassing. Like, Christopher Nolan is literally, especially at an IMAX or 35mm print, you're like, you're really thrust into this world. So,
and I didn't think it was there were problems all the way through. I thought there were certain moments.
Oh yeah, not all, not top to bottom.
Like most, it was so. It's interesting. It's like a couple places where you're like, oh, that sounded a little weird. So you wonder too. Was like, was it deliberate or did it sound different in the booth or like what happened? Because I missed dialogue, and one of the things I didn't realize was the robot was talking. Like the robot had a voice. Like in the space, I'm like, wait, is that one of the other characters? Because they were all talking at once. And going back and forth, I'm like, oh no, that was the robot's voice, and then I just missed another piece of dialogue. So,
voiced by one of my favorite people, Bill Irwin.
Oh yeah,
Bill Irwin voiced him.
Oh really?
Yeah.
He did a great job.
I didn't notice it as much because I think I was just so entranced by the whole movie.
right,
and it's long and it's methodical in the best way, in the 2001 way, that I was just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, this is, I was just so like, again, I'm watching a 70 millimeter print on a screen that's twice the size of a normal screen.
Right.
And I was just like, it so took me over that I didn't notice that. If I go back and see it again, and I want to, I'll definitely pay attention to that. Mm-hmm. So let's
I want to see it again too. So I'll go with you.
Let's get into this too. Since we're talking, you know, it is Oscar season. Who do you think is going to get nominations out of this movie?
I think this is going to sweep nominations. Whether it'll win them all, I don't know. But I think it's going to be nominated in many different categories.
Definitely Best Picture.
Yeah. Best Picture.
Not sound mixing. We have already decided that.
Yeah. Best Director. Best Director, for sure. Best Cinematography. Yeah. Best Production Design. Mm-hmm.
The Tech Awards, it's going to got to
get. Oh, yeah. I think it'll get Tech Awards. And probably Script, too. Mm-hmm. Might be nominated for Script.
Does McConaughey get a nomination? Now he's got Oscar cred now.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he'll get a nomination. I think Anne Hathaway will get a nomination too.
Oh yeah, I love her.
I think, you know, the thing is Matthew McConaughey, and I like him as an actor and he's a cool dude and all that, but man, he's gotta be careful. Like he's gonna become a parody of himself.
Well, I think he has been
not
careful though.
Careful. But like the way Nicholson is now. Every time you see Nicholson acting, he's acting like Nicholson.
Right.
You know what I mean? And it's, and like I said, I like him a lot, but I just, you know.
Don't you think Dallas Buyers Club though, just like that, set him apart in so much?
I think he's being smart with what.
No,
what
he's being smart. Yeah. But I caught it, and then I love Dallas Buyers Club, obviously. But I mean, even that, just there was just Matthew McConaughey in this at some point where we're going up to space. You know, it's like,
right.
It's like, so,
but that doesn't mean he is from this small town in Texas where.
Yeah. So. I mean, I understand you're justifying his character of himself. That's fine. I'm sure he appreciates it. I just think that's a route he could go, but he's doing really good.
Isn't that, well, this is an interesting question, because that is always the quandary of somebody that they get that big.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I remember when we talked about Gravity and we had Stephanie Wilder Taylor on, she, and I heard this from other people. Again, I loved Gravity.
Yeah.
She couldn't just get past that. That's George Clooney.
Yeah.
Like, I know some people who couldn't get past, they go to Hoth Planet and that's Matt Damon.
Right.
Right.
Like,
right.
That took them out of it. Sure. Didn't take it out for me.
And that was supposed to be the big reveal, the big surprise.
Yeah, that was the big surprise. He's not in the credits or anything like that. Yeah. To me, I was okay with that because these astronauts were sort of revered. Like, we sent up these, whatever, six people, and mm-hmm. this is our last best hope, and everyone knows them. Oh, I know. Like, there's that conversation when he breaks into that which is now when they're like, you don't know who we are? We're NASA.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I thought that was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, these are the people we've already sent up. I was glad it was Matt Damon and not just some sort of character actor, because it needed to be...
What if it was Danny Trejo?
Welcome to the jungle.
Like, oh, that would be awesome.
That would be awesome. And that just becomes the dumbest movie ever.
But I don't get that, because I think Matt Damon's, in my opinion, is such a good actor that you lose Matt Damon when you see him act. You know what I mean?
That's what I felt too. I didn't feel like there's Matt Damon.
No, it didn't bother me.
If it would have been, what's his face?
Keanu Reeves.
From Good Will Hunting.
Ben Affleck.
It would have been Ben Affleck. I would have just
Cole
been
Hauser.
Like, I don't care. I don't care if this is a premiere or not. I'm walking.
Right. No, I think you're right. And let's get into that storyline. Did that bother you guys that Matt Damon ended up being the bad guy who went nuts?
No, it didn't. Oh. Because you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of these other science fiction stories, like everything from HAL
right.
going mm-hmm. nuts to the. Some of the characters in Aliens, have or Bishop going crazy, mm-hmm. but also the corporate guy who was like trying to sabotage
Paul Reiser in Alien too,
to bring back the I thought it worked for me, because also isolation, mm-hmm. You're on a plane, you're on this crazy mission, you know you're never leaving unless someone comes to rescue you. You know, what else? You're going to go nuts, and you may not be so self-sacrificing that you're like, fuck it, I'm taking other people down with me, and they're going to rescue me,
right.
Or I'm going to kill them.
Right. Well, that's interesting.
I agree with Mancini 100% on that.
I think so, too, because I've watched, I remember, I think it was, Discovery or something like that. They were talking about, well, if we want to go to Mars or something like that, or the next, and they're like, it'll take years, and we have to, how do we have human interaction? How do we, you have to send a male and a female, because like, right. They're going to have to have sex. Like, how are you going to be compatible with nobody else around? No human interaction. You don't realize how that would drive you crazy. Oh, yeah. to where I was like, yeah, that is believable, man. You would go out in space and you would lose your shit.
As a comic on the road.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. I was just in Tampa. And I almost fucking was bouncing off the walls in the Hilton Garden.
And you didn't have a robot with you.
I didn't have a robot.
Well, he did have Doug.
I mean, yeah, that was pretty bad.
I don't even know what that means.
I bought that.
The swimming pool was too cold for me to swim laps in. They don't heat the fucking pool in Tampa, and they've had a cold spell. I couldn't swim laps in the pool. I almost lost my shit.
Yeah. You almost went into a suspended animation.
I was nuts. I almost went goddamn crazy and tricked Doug into going into a ravine so I could kill him and get out of there. And
Wow, speaking of wormholes.
Yeah.
Sorry, we went down this one.
Yeah, it's 420 somewhere, even in space.
You know what I wanted to mention this about the robot, too. Like, I loved the way they made the robot, because whenever you see robots in science fiction, they're humanoid, or they look like and it's something weird, like with the face, like remember the movie The Black Hole, mm-hmm. when they had like Vincent or whatever, right. like these big giant eyes. Like, I love the fact
that
they
really
made these
bad movie. The Black Hole and Saturn V are like
oh
two
my
of
god,
the worst.
Black Hole is absolutely awful. Although, you know, there's a couple similarities in Interstellar when they go in the black hole,
and the McDonald's merchandise is great.
Yeah, the the. but what I loved
a
about
a bottomless cup of wormhole soda.
What I loved about the robots in Interstellar is that, first of all, they didn't look like robots. They were literally panels. And
that was really cool.
What they did is they realized, like, if you're going to make a robot, it's more practical to make it in this fashion, so it's adjustable to any environment in any situation. Mm-hmm. Like when you saw it spin. And like, oh my god, yeah, of course it would be able to do that.
Sure.
Like, it could spit, because the way it's designed, it could adapt to anything. It could climb, it could mm-hmm. manipulate different things, and it could actually go fast and spin if it needed to. And it had a screen. So I thought it was a great, that was one of the great things about the production design.
Yeah.
Like, everything about it made sense. Like,
no
if you
one's
saw,
ever done that before.
Right. Mm-hmm.
In this sci-fi depiction, and it, like you said, it made perfect sense. That's right. Why Nolan is so great, because he thinks of this thing that
feel tacked on. It feels like makes sense.
It doesn't feel like he's trying to be wacky or I'm going to be different. It's this is he thought it out. Like
mm-hmm.
as we advance our tech, you know, our
he didn't
brains
make,
advance also, and it becomes more of a necessity. What do we need? We don't need Rosie.
He didn't make
the robot. Right. We need a robot.
He didn't
robot
make
that,
Danger Will Robinson.
Yeah.
He didn't
make,
you know, that.
And if you look at the robots that are coming out now, they're not human-like. You know, the robots mm-hmm. that we're using now. They're
Roomba.
Practical. Yeah, the Roomba.
Is that the vacuuming one?
Yeah.
It was the thing my cat was riding when you walked in.
Yeah.
I made a laugh. I made $50,000 on YouTube.
Okay. Well, anything else? What else? Anything else we should touch on, or did we get it? Did we get our Interstellars out?
Yeah, I think we touched on pretty much, you know, a fair amount of it.
Well, this was awesome.
Do you? I have a this is a question for Graham, because he's a surfer. In the when the guy dies, he gets hit by the big wave, which I had a big problem with about how he died.
That was terrifying, by the way. When they're like, "That's a big wave." As a surfer,
that was my question. Because I do the same thing when I see it. Like, it's one of the most terrifying things for me to watch on screen is when a big, like the end of The Perfect Storm.
Oh God!
And when a huge wave is coming,
Armageddon.
You just know the reality of being held under on a minuscule wave compared to a mountain, but
the biggest surf I've ever been in was maybe 10 feet. And I remember getting crushed on that. And maybe that was like a couple summers ago. And I remember I came out of the water. I talked to you like a day or two after, and I was rattled.
I could still see it.
You under, right? It
holds you under. I could still see it in your eyes when you were telling me the story.
And because I've been in 10-foot waves, so when I see guys on surf videos surfing 30, 40-foot waves, I'm like, it physically scares the shit out of me. Because I have an idea what that's like. Mm-hmm. So when I saw that wave, I was like, Anne Hathaway, get the fuck out of there. Why are you grabbing that box?
Right. And like, I thought it was just me. That's why I wanted to ask
you. Oh, no.
It was just terrifying to watch.
It is.
As a non-surfer, it was terrifying to watch because you know that that's a devastating wave coming.
Yeah, and you know, like,
you don't know
when that. That's well, like,
you feel like you
know. any surf videos or documentaries I've ever watched, you know, big wave surfers. One of the ways they train is they walk on the bottom of the ocean holding a rock for as long as they can.
Or run, actually, run.
Or run. That's how they train because they know they're going to be held underwater on a wipeout for 2 minutes.
Wow.
And that's how they...
And when they train, I have a buddy who's training to surf Mavericks who surfs out here, and he's training for 2 years to train to go surf those waves. It's not like you're just going to go train for a couple months.
You're training for the wipeout.
Wow. Yeah.
Not the surfing.
Not the riding the wave.
I honestly feel I could ride Mavericks. I could never survive a wipeout.
No.
You're held under.
If you just put me on the wave, yeah. But like, I mean, to paddle into position, to get over the wave, and if you, it's when you wipe out because that wave is going, the bigger the wave, the faster it is. So it's going 50 miles an hour, you know? Wow. Like,
and if you're not just being held under, you're being literally ragdolled.
Like, ragdolled.
Feeling like, I've heard people describe it's feeling like they're just pulling your arm, the water's pulling the arms out of your sockets. So hold your breath.
Right.
While you're being ragdolled.
And try not to panic.
And panic is
which you'll burn more oxygen that way.
And panic is the thing, man. If you panic, you're dead. You're dead.
You're dead. Dead.
Yeah.
They have to just sit there and get calm and just like...
This has happened before. You know, I've had to talk myself being held under and like... I think the biggest surf I've been in is 15 feet. But just being held under. So just talking to myself. All right. You've been here before.
Yeah. You got to talk yourself through it.
You're going to come up. So don't... You know, you're going to eventually come up. Anyway, we can't sit down and not... talk about surfing.
And then when you come back up out of that wave, it's 7 years later.
Yeah, that's undersea. There's a time portal. Yeah. This is a theory of relativity.
Your relativity
is under every wave. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, I feel like I was touted for all these like behind the scenes stories, and I don't feel like I really gave any. Is there any things that maybe I could answer or questions?
Well, you actually gave more than you think you did.
Oh, okay. Good.
Because most of our audience has never been to a premiere.
Okay.
Hasn't been to the Oscars.
It wasn't one of the things is like, and you guys know, and it might sound a little like, oh, look at me, but being on set is really boring. Even unless you're the director.
It's hurry up and wait.
It's hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
If you're an actor, if you're a writer,
it's a lot of downtime.
It's even boring because you've perfected the script as much as it's going to be. You're just there in case something doesn't work. Well, nothing. So having said that, a lot of sets are fun to go hang out in because they're spectacular and they're cool. In Okotoks, this was the cornfield. So
right,
visiting set a lot because I didn't want to go stand in the middle of a fucking cornfield.
Right. Well, had you been on the sets with the practical spaceships, that would have been probably
which
a little cooler.
I was probably not allowed on. But.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, what kind of stuff in terms of your wife saying the difference is like, obviously she probably just has a shorthand with the Coen brothers. Mm-hmm. Like they just know. Okay. And she's just, so working with Christopher Nolan for the first time, what kind of things did she say were the differences or Christopher Nolan likes it this or that, or,
if she did tell me anything, I don't know if I would feel comfortable saying that.
Oh, okay.
But I definitely, from what I got from Mary and, he definitely knew what he wanted. And it was kind of cool for me, if I can make myself part of this movie. She's like, oh, because her big work on this were the suits.
Spacesuits.
The spacesuits.
Right.
And how they have to function because they're going in water. And it was very difficult for her. And I think she did an amazing job. I'm looking at it on the picture behind
us. Well,
that's
the crazy thing, too, because a lot of, like for True Grit, when she got nominated, it's period piece.
Mm-hmm.
And this is creating something, like, brand new.
Yeah, yeah.
So what was that experience like?
Well, it was cool for her because she did a lot of research. And I got to help out because one of his reference points was Leia in Empire Strikes Back. She maybe saw him when she was a kid, but she never... So I got to, you know, go show her the scenes where they're, you know, where she's at and stuff like that.
Slave uniform.
Yeah, the slave uniform. Well, she knows about that because she's got one in the closet. She loves it.
Nobody
loves
her
when I put it on.
And she plays Jabba? What's going on?
You call my wife fat?
No, oh, Christ. Oh, I never should have said
my wife is on the plane with you today.
Oh, what? I'm not responding to all of this. I'm going to misdirect. So, so then research-wise, so what? Where was she? Was she researching like NASA suits and shit like that? Or
I think a lot of that, you know, and I've asked about, you know, how come they're so, you know, I learned about it too, because I usually like to find out where, because like before I met a costume designer, you know, I work in television. It's you go to the store and you buy your costumes pretty much, right, you know, you don't, you actually draw and design and then people make that. Okay. That's cool. I had no idea. So yeah, she would grab research. Like I said, that was, you know, they looked at actual NASA suits. And then I remember her trying to just like, okay, now we got to put this thing in water and see if this thing's going to hold up, you know, because they're going, they go into the water up when they're, they shot all that in Iceland. So they're in, you know, freezing cold weather.
Were they staying at the ice hotel?
No, I was hoping she would. By the way, I didn't go to Iceland. She's like, oh, you guys should come to Iceland. I'm like, 6 weeks in Okotoks. Going home, man. Me and the kid are going home.
Well, that's, well, see, that's interesting. That's really cool because you don't realize that when you watch this movie that, like, I mean, I've asked Mary and she, you know, she starts work 2-3 months out with research and all that stuff. And now this one, she has to literally build practical suits that work underwater and move and look cool and let the actors do what they got to do.
And look like they could survive in space.
Yes.
Yeah. Where do we put the oxygen tank? That it would look feasible and not block the actor. And
now is this like,
how do we not get it to fog up?
Well, and, you got to have a helmet that we can see the actor's face.
Well, now I have a question. And she actually referenced like this
real
like,
quick, Chris. She actually referenced, Nolan said, I think surfers wear helmets when they surf. And she asked me, do you know? And I'm like, yeah, my buddy Peter wears a helmet on the, on the thing. So that's because it's a very form fitting.
And some big, but like big wave surfers sometimes will wear, because they can hit their head on the reef
or,
and shit,
or rocky points. Right. A lot of people will wear them.
Well, what I was going to ask for like a job like this, where she has to design these specific spacesuits, does she have to consult with like a scientist, something like that? Like as far as where the stuff would go, or is that like part of the research?
That would maybe be part of the research. I don't remember her really consulting with anybody off the top of my head, but I mean, it's part of the research. It all depends on what the, if the director cares or not, you know? I mean, I wrote on a kid's Disney show and we had to have a consultant from Africa because it was based in Africa. So it depends on who you're working with,
I would
whether they
Nolan
care.
Would.
I would imagine he probably, I mean, he seems like a pretty smart dude, you know? I could never have written that script.
No way.
You know, so he probably has some, you know, some people consulting for sure.
That's awesome. I love hearing stuff like that because you just see so much work went into it. They played a little at some AMC theaters, you know, in the last, in the month leading up to the release of Interstellar. They showed some behind the scenes interviews with Nolan and the practical effects and your wife. Did you know that?
I heard, but I never...
they show an interview with her. She's like in like a big
probably
wardrobe.
The EPK, and she probably hated every minute of it, which is why I'm here and she's not, because she hates doing stuff like this. Meanwhile, I'm like, talk about something. Sure. What is it?
Yeah.
No, I don't know anything about it, but I'll talk about it for 20 minutes.
So that was really, I thought it was really cool. So all you guys listening, you know, love to hear your thoughts and comments on either the message boards or the Facebook page. To hear what you thought about the film, because it was really truly one of those amazing cinematic experiences for me, at least. And I like Gravity was was great last year,
right?
It blew it away, in my opinion. And that's not a slam on Gravity.
I think they were different movies.
They are different movies, but I mean,
I thought they were both great for each one what they were. But this was more 2001.
This was epic. Man.
This was
this is
film.
An epic.
And Gravity was like
Gravity was a small, much smaller scope movie. You know, a much smaller story.
It's a personal story in space.
Yeah, where this one is like an epic story of you know,
humanity.
So
the problem I had with Gravity, and which is has only bit me in the ass once, I never go to the movies anymore. It's just, even when I'm on the road, I just want to be alone, and I get the screeners every year, and I got a flat screen and a sound system. So I watch them every year, but I watched Gravity at home, and I'm like, why is there a fucking screwdriver floating across the goddamn, oh, I'm supposed to see this in 3D. Like, it was like the weirdest.
Gravity you needed to see in a big screen.
Yeah.
You needed to see it in 3D.
It was the weirdest thing. I'm like, oh, of course, there's a pencil floating right now. I'm supposed to see this in 3D.
In a movie theater.
Well, not on my couch.
I cannot recommend. You got to see Interstellar on the big screen.
Yes.
What did that chalk in? 3 hours?
Yeah, it's long.
Yeah, it's 3 hours.
It's long, man. It's like 244, 250.
It's almost three. It's pretty close.
Yeah, it's.
But it's great. Go see it. Go see it in the theater.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us. So we banged out two spoiler eps.
There you go.
Back to back. Yeah. So
who's the other one?
We just did Big Hero 6 with Chris's daughter.
Oh, I just listened to that on the way over. I can't believe I had to follow Chris's daughter.
Yeah, way to go.
You did good.
Great. I don't sound nearly as adorable as you did.
And you can't sing.
Yeah.
So
you didn't ask.
Singing.
And there's.
Wow.
Hollywood.
All right. Well, that's our show, you guys. Murray Valeriano, where can people find you on the internet?
You can catch me at Murray V on Twitter, murrayvaleriano.com for tour dates and shows. And my podcast is roadstories.tv, where I have a bunch of different comedians. Come on, we discuss the fun stuff and crazy stuff that happens on the road.
It's a great podcast, too.
Both of you have been on several times.
It's really fun.
You did it at PodFest the last 2 years.
Last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Great time at PodFest this year. This was the best year, I think, so far. And I hosted the stand-up show, and I was going to say something at the end, but I didn't get a chance. But just watching you, more Graham, because I see Graham more often than I do, just watching you and Andy Wood talk about it and then seeing what it became is really, it's quite impressive.
Oh, thanks, man.
Because this town is full of people with ideas.
Yeah, everyone's got a big idea.
And nobody ever does it. And just especially to see it on this level this year. Congratulations, you guys. You got definitely on something.
Thanks. Good. Next year's going to be great. We're about to release the dates. We got them.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But mine is roadstories. That's enough about you guys. roadstories.tv. Go on there, and it's great. And Graham was actually my first guest on my first episode.
What?
Graham, Jackie Cation.
Oh, that's right.
Chris Frangiola.
That's right.
The first three. It was my tester episode. It was the first one. I would like to think if it wasn't for that, there would be no Comedy Film Nerds.
Maybe. I think we already had the website going, right? Maybe not.
Probably by then. We've been around for a lot longer than I thought.
Yeah. Hold on. I have my detailed timeline. Yeah. All right. Great. Well, thanks for having me. I enjoy your show. I listen to it when I'm on the road, so it's always fun to come on and do it. It's been a while, so I'm happy.
Great to have
back.
You, and thanks for inviting us into the inner sanctum.
Oh, sure, man.
Thanks, sir. Well, the good thing is Murray lives near me, so I didn't have to drive to the valley.
I'm happy to turn it around every once in a while.
All right, guys. So, Comedy Film Nerds in Oklahoma City, December 11th. We're doing two shows that night. Chris and I are doing stand-up at, I believe, 7:30. And then right after that, 9:30-ish, we will start Comedy Film Nerds, do a live podcast.
Like so much fun.
It's a blast. We're going to show we've been doing just showing trailers now. That's our
really
live show.
Fun.
We love
really
it. Fun. It's a blast. The fans love it. It's really cool. We show trailers. We'll pick a couple cool looking movies and we'll find some really shitty ones that we can make fun of. The Judge. We'll just show The Judge on a loop. So check that out, you guys. And of course, I'll be, if you are in Hawaii, I will be headlining December 6th in Honolulu at Hawaiian Brian's. Also, we'll be in Irvine, in San Diego and Irvine with Doug after Christmas. We'll be releasing those dates soon at American Comedy Company for one night and then two nights at the Irvine Improv. And then I'm headlining Zanies in downtown Chicago, January 2nd through the 4th, and the Improv at Harvey's Hotel and Casino in South Lake Tahoe, January 28th through February 1.
Headlining Tahoe?
Yes.
Good for you.
Headlining
Lake Tahoe. It's about time they headlined you there.
Thank you. It's nice. So I get a little skiing in.
Can I say one real quick thing to one of your listeners who is a listener of mine? I promise I will bring comics on safari to San Diego. She cornered me at PodFest and hit me on Twitter a few times. I think her name's Darcy. Forgive me if I got your name wrong. I'll get you. 2015, Comics on Safari is coming to San Diego.
I love it.
I swear. Okay.
Yeah, I love San Diego. Any excuse to go surf down there. All right, Chris, anything else?
I'll actually be at Fantasy Springs in Las Vegas in January. I'll have those dates in the next episode. But also, we want to let you guys know it's Christmas shopping season.
Hello.
You want to check out the store and really help us out. There's a lot of cool things in there. Everything from the Comedy Film Nerds books to Graham CD to all the Dana Gould merchandise. And some really cool martial arts stuff. Look, we've got Death Grip and Rick Myers' Kung Fu movie book. So there's a lot of cool stuff to check out.
As we've always said, guys, if everyone who listens to the show spent $20 with us once a year, we could really keep everything going.
Yes.
So we appreciate you guys doing that. And subscribe to us on iTunes, because the even if you don't, that's not where you listen, like you listen to us somewhere else, just the subscription.
Subscribe anyway.
Subscribe. Yeah. Just hit the subscription button because it helps our ratings in iTunes.
Yes.
So thank you guys so much for listening. We're glad we're, you know, we're not as busy with earbuds. We're able to do more spoiler eps. It is Oscar season, so we'll be doing more episodes. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Maria Valeriano.
Thanks for having me. Thank you very much.
Thank you to Christopher Nolan for making Interstellar.
Yes, thank you indeed.
So my name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Wormhole.